from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey! How we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brendan behind the glass. It is a Friday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's getaway day. Getaway day on this Friday. Houston Astros opened up a three-game series yesterday against the Seattle Mariners. They won. Astros won. They've won four in a row against Seattle since the All-Star break. So every time it feels like Seattle's getting closer. Seattle's got some motivation. They're climbing the standings. They're within 10 games twice. And then the Astros put Seattle in their place yet again.
Well, they're hoping for the Elam ending, all the Mariners fans. They're going to now stay instead of win, because this is their World Series, instead of going like first one to win four, now they're going to extend it and go, no, based on the competitive nature, even though we lost, now it's best of like nine, just so that they still have a chance to try and get back into the thing. Because again, demoralizing to the Mariners and their fans, the Astros let them think they had a chance last night and then did what they needed to do. In a very weird way, it worked out for Dusty Baker that his two-hitter got on base, though it was by taking a 100-mile-an-hour fastball high and tight, stole a base, scored, and got a victory.
Some retaliation tonight, going high and tight.
You know what? I was thinking about that at the time simply because of the fact that it is Scott Service. There has been a little bit of history. The fact that they don't back down and they've been so boisterous about talking about who they are and what they can do and they're, you know, they're this, that, and the other. I don't think that it's out of the realm.
You go high and tight to Yuli. There was a two-strike count. You dive on Bregman's leg.
Boy, he sure did, too. I mean, I know Fat Boy was pissed off that he wasn't effective with his hundos, but the fact but he really does. But the fact that he showed no remorse when he hit Yuli, and then when he did flat out just look like he was planting and barreling his ass and all of his weight onto Bregman, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I could see it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Something to keep an eye on over the next three games, even though I don't think it was intentional at all, either play. But you go high and tight to one of your veterans, you land on the leg of one of your better players, maybe.
You know, I don't know where you're at with this, but here's
what it is. Old school Dusty would have done it.
But yes, and here's where I am on the whole, I don't think he did it intentionally, but I think that, and you've seen this with several Astros pitchers, if they truly didn't mean it intentionally, they'll at least tip of the cap, nod the hat, my bad-ish, on the way to first base. He tried to be Johnny Tough Guy the minute he hit Yuli, and he tried to huff and puff. And I'm like, okay, bro, look, you throw harder than most, if not all of the
maybe
league.
Maybe all.
Yeah.
That guy throws 102, I've seen.
And you didn't tag him in the ass cheek or between the shoulder blades. You were buzzing the tower.
Yeah.
Like, I would have at least put my hand up going, my bad, bro.
There's no way he did it on purpose. No chance. It was leading off the inning of a tie game. It's Yuli Gurriel.
What I'm saying is,
Jordan
though, show some remorse.
I get that. I get that. I think that you have something there. You're right. Like, once it happened, no intent at all. Because right. There's no way you're throwing at a dude that gets on base 29% of the time in a tie game in the eighth ahead of Jordan Alvarez and a dude that's homered earlier in the game. But some remorse could have been there. Yep. And then diving on Bregman's leg on that wild pitch was something as well. Jose Urquidy continues to pitch very well. Actually, you brought up Yuli in the two hole, and I saw you tweeting about this before the game about Yuli in the two hole. Mm-hmm. It's two games in a row with Yuli in the two hole. And Dusty Baker's logic, and I understand the logic, I don't agree with it, but I understand it, is that he doesn't want Yuli in situations with runners in scoring position. He doesn't want them behind Jordan and Tucker and Bregman. He feels like that's why Yuli's pressing. That's why he's had an offensive season that's on par with some of the worst offensive first basemans in 2022. They want him at the top of the order to get on base and not have the pressures of batting with runners on base and in scoring position. What do you think of Yuli in the two-hole for back-to-back days?
I was surprised. I know Dre on 290 said, look, he had two doubles in the two-hole previously, so it was worth another shot. I just don't think he belongs there based on the year he's had, the ineffectiveness, especially with runners in scoring position. I don't know that I believe what Dusty's saying in terms of taking pressure off, but also getting on. But it worked out for one night. It worked out for them because late in the game, he was the guy that was the catalyst to manufacturing the first of the two runs that they got. I don't like him there. I don't want him there. I don't think that Peña did anything either to warrant being sent that far down the lineup. And I think that for a young guy that's more impressionable too, that I hope there was a conversation or two had between Dusty and Peña and whoever else needed to be involved.
You think you owe the rookie a conversation there?
Based on what he's done for you and the fact that, you know, wherever he's been, he seems to perform and he seems to be good, I think he owes him at least a conversation if he's moving him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he probably told him beforehand that, you know, you're batting six hole, not in the second spot. I don't think either one of them is a great two-hole candidate, if I'm being completely honest with you. Neither one of them is like a great on-base guy. Yuli worse than Peña. If I'm going between the two and you're making me pick one of the two, I'm going Peña over Yuli. But because Brantley's out, Brantley's one of your best on-base guys. He's been out for about a month now, so he's not there. You really don't have a great, you know, solution for the two spot. I would just bump everybody up. I would go Altuve, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, and then everybody else can fall in line after that. But Yuli did score the go-ahead run. Credit to him for wearing that 101-mile-per-hour fastball on the hand.
That ain't fun.
And then eventually scoring. Yeah, he had the pad there. Yeah, hit him in the hand.
I thought it hit him in the upper between the rotator cuff and the bicep.
Got him right there in the hand. He had a little hand pad on. Which broadcast were you watching, by the way, yesterday?
I was watching ours, the AT&T Sports.
I watched the FS1 because I just wanted to.
I didn't realize it was on FS1.
Yeah, I just wanted to hear something. Look, FS1's not as good as the AT&T Sportsnet broadcast. I can't remember the dude's name. Okay. I can't remember the dude's name. But I wanted to listen to it from a national perspective. I also wanted to listen to it in case there was, like, trade tidbits. Because they always have, like, a sideline reporter. Or they go to the studio. Oh, what are you hearing around the league?
Because Katie Nolan's going to give that to you?
She's not FS1, is she?
Oh, I thought she does the Friday night only Apple ones too?
Yeah, Apple and FS1, not the same thing. Right. Anyways.
Shows you how much I watch them.
I thought they did an okay job. The one nitpick I would have, every single time that Julio Rodriguez like did something, there was a deep fly out in the first inning that was caught in front of the warning track. They went nuts about Julio Rodriguez. Oh, Julio Rodriguez caught in front of the warning track in center field. It seemed like they were gushing a little bit about Julio and the Seattle Mariners. Jose Urquidy. We talked about Jose Urquidy quite a bit in yesterday's program because we saw the report, Ken Rosenthal in The Athletic saying that the Astros could be shopping one of their three young club-controlled starting pitchers. In return, they get a bat that's under club control going forward. Catcher, center field, first base have all been rumored. And it was Urquidy, Luis Garcia, Christian Javier is the triad that you're trying to choose from. You know, Urquidy was a very popular pick. Brendan put it on the social. Urquidy was the most popular answer, I would say. You were on the Urquidy side of that as well, if you have to pick one of the three. And he was even asked about it after the game yesterday, if he's heard his name and trade rumors and all of that stuff. And Urquidy's like, yeah, but this is a business. I hope I'm here for a long time. But if I'm not, I understand. That dude just continues to pitch well. What was it, 8 in a row quality starts? Eight in a row quality starts. I've been pointing to the fact that he ditched his cutter back on June 8th, and I think that's what started the 8 in a row quality starts. His ERA since then's under 250. Like, this dude's pitching like one of your better starting pitchers. He looked very good again last night for the Astros.
I think, Jeremy, though, at a certain point, you're right, and I think the fans see it, and we see it, and you know, I think that the other players see it. But I think that where the difficult task of a general manager comes in is this a good thing because you now don't want to trade him? Or is this a good thing because now he has extra added value that he might not have had a little while ago so that you might be able to go get somebody that betters your team even more so without having to give it up as much as you thought you would have? To our conversation yesterday, you thought you go Garcia instead of Urquidy because he could bring back more. Another quality start by Urquidy kind of pumps it up a little bit to say to teams, hey, wait a minute now, and maybe this is a guy that we should consider, and with the team control and all the different things that really are very advantageous for a team going to get him, that they can consider him as well.
He didn't get younger yesterday, though.
He didn't, but I think that the bigger thing is you can afford to give up one guy either way.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you know that you're younger and the things that are the reasons why we think Garcia is more advantageous, if you can hang on to him, if you can get rid of the Urquidy instead, you know you can replace him in the rotation, but your team gets better not only for the future, but more importantly for this season. I think it's a really good position to be in if you're James Click. You're just going to have to make a hard decision and say, as much as he wants to be here and we like him, we like the chances better if we make this move.
Yeah, but I think you could also say that about Garcia, right? And then let's flip it to the other team. Let's just say it's the Nationals because the Astros have been in on Josh Bell. If you're the Nationals, why do you want a 27-year-old starting pitcher? You're about to trade Josh Bell and then also Juan Soto, who still has 2 years of club control after this season. And last time I checked, Juan Soto was younger than Jose Urquidy. Like, it doesn't seem like Jose Urquidy fits into the plans of a Washington or a team that's looking to
be a
seller.
Right?
Yeah, like any seller. Let's just say any seller. Why would any seller be trying to acquire a 27-year-old starter? I think the more likely scenario is that you trade Jose Urquidy maybe to a contender in the National League, and then you flip your second-tier prospects or whatever you get for Jose Urquidy now for a Josh Bell. You enhance your minor league system by trading an Urquidy, and then you trade from that minor league system for a Josh Bell, for a Wilson Contreras, for a rental.
Yeah, I think I see your point. And you know, in the NBA, it'd be easy to just make it a three-way trade, right? Just make it a three-way trade.
It is that to an extent, right?
And I can understand that. When I look at it, I think about it as much as I just said it. Baltimore, because they're in the wild card discussion right now, they're a little bit more focused on winning now than some teams that are going to be total rebuild mode like Kansas City, like Detroit, like teams like that. So I believe that he has value across the league. I think you're right in the fact that the really, truly full-blown rebuilding teams are not going to have as much interest in an Urquidy. But I think that because of the expanded playoffs, because more teams are in the hunt, they will take a look at an Urquidy and say, yeah, there's a guy that's better than most guys we have on our staff. I could use that guy. It's going to be a real quick turnaround in terms of if you trade him one place and then take what you get to trade him elsewhere to go get Bell or whoever you need. But if he can pull it off, so be it for James Click. I'd be happy. I just think that the value went up again last night with the way Urquidy pitched.
Yeah, I think the value is more for a contender than a seller, though. And you're right. You got to get creative in how you spend the whole thing. And it might not be like an exact three-way. You might just keep the prospects you get for an Urquidy, but then trade the prospects that you currently have for a rental bat, a Bell, a Contreras. Not sure I love the idea, but certainly on the table for James Click. Bill Barnwell covers the NFL for ESPN. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour, 12:30. And then coming up at 1:30, I think it's going to be a name that you love hearing from. Former Astro general manager and the general manager at the time that the Astros got to the World Series for the first time ever in 2005, Tim Perpura is going to join us at 1:30, talk about the trade deadline, what it's like to be in the GM seat with the trade deadline approaching. He was also an assistant GM in the Astros traded for Carlos Beltran and Randy Johnson, so he knows what's going on when you're talking about what's going on around the league come trade deadline. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Yesterday, it's an Alex Bregman game. And also, do you take any other team in the American League seriously aside from the Yankees? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Buzzkill did his thing yesterday for the Houston Astros. Our very own loyal listener, Dr. Dre, loves to call.
Yeah, he loves him some Bregs.
To Dre's credit, when Bregman does something, though, he tips his cap to old Buzzkill. He'll still call him Buzzkill, but he'll credit Buzzkill. He'll give him his flowers, which I admire.
Okay.
You don't admire that? How can you not admire that?
Because it's Dre. That's why.
You don't like Dre?
You forgot about Dre? I pretend that I don't like Dre.
Okay. All right. 713-780-ESP. And it was Alex Bregman Day. It was good to see that, though, because he was getting hot there a little bit, like early July, late June, starting to turn it around. Still wasn't like 18-19 Bregman, but a good player. Had been in a little bit of a lull last couple of weeks. The numbers started to trend back down. Good to see, one, the two-run homer in the first inning. You get the Astros on the board. But what I really loved, and we've talked about this quite a bit, get Yordan Alvarez protection into this lineup. It's the most important thing you can do with this lineup. Not only did he protect him in the first inning with the two-run homer, but he got a two-out RBI. Gave the Astros the go-ahead run there in the eighth inning. Fascinating to see clutch Bregman show up. Also had one in the middle innings. I can't remember, but there was two outs, runner at second. He had a hard ground ball up the middle. So good to see him in RBI situations come through for the Astros.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Look, I think that As much as we talk about what needs to be brought in externally, one thing that this team has to have in order to have enough internally is I believe they have to have a quality Alex Bregman. He's not going to be, based on the slow start that he had, he's not going to be a 300 hitter this year. But we know that in the last couple months, he has been heating up. He has been more consistent. He is not trying to pull everything. He is doing a lot of the things, including still maintaining getting on base, that you need him to do for the rest of this lineup to be successful. So I love the fact that he is where he is, doing what he's doing. And you know what I saw last night was the big key to me, was the fact that after the home run, he did the full old-school Alex Bregman camera pose and played up the camera and had that cocky swagger. It means something, people. Don't kid yourself. The fact that mentally he was struggling with everything that he was going through in the last couple of years, and even this season, because he knows he's better than what he was putting up. The fact that he did what he did last night and then later on in the game got done what he needed to get done was huge in terms of between Alex Bregman's ears feeling good about what he's doing again.
Confidence matters. Like, confidence matters immensely in all of sports. I would even say, I don't want to say it matters more in baseball than other sports, but it's very much a confidence game in a sport that's built around failure, right? I mean, you fell 7 times out of 10, you're a pretty good ball player, right? So it's great to see that confidence from Alex Bregman. He did survive that scary scene, though, in the 8th inning when he scored the run after the wild pitch. And it's like, okay, Bregman has a big game. He hits the home run. He has the go-ahead RBI, eventually the game-winning RBI, and you just felt for that brief moment whenever he tried to get up after being landed on by this big, burly pitcher. You're like, oh, no, here we go. Bregman finally has a huge game. Yep. He's heroic. He's the reason that they won, and now you're worried about his leg whenever this big dude jumps on top of him. And Bregman getting up is like, okay, cool, Bregman's getting up. But for that moment when he fell, and then everybody's that half-inning before he went back to third base, it's like, oh, yep, no, here we
you
go again.
You see it, too, when Dusty looked at him?
You scared?
And he thought about it, and then in the dugout, he goes, like, get back out there, play third base. Because I think that until I saw the third replay, it might have been, the slow-mo of where his foot was when it was landed on, to know that it wasn't a sprained ankle, that it wasn't twisted, it didn't roll over, it just got landed on, I think it was more like a stinger in my mind then. I was like, okay, he can shake that off. Mm-hmm. If he had actually, as you know, turned and stretched a ligament or rolled it over a little bit, now we're talking a bigger issue, because even defensively at third base, that means he's going to have to do some things differently or be limited, and that could be a problem.
I'm still hoping that, you know, look, he looked fine, stayed in the game, said afterwards that he was okay. I want to see him in the lineup today, just to put all doubts at ease, right? Like, I feel pretty good about it, but will all my doubts be erased if he's, like, not in the lineup? No, probably not. 713-780-ESPN, 6030, I'm not for trading Urquidy unless it's a legit haul. I trust him more in the postseason than Garcia. Urquidy does have the postseason wins. Look, I think you could go either way. I think Garcia has more trade value. I think Garcia just slightly better looked around the league than Urquidy because of Urquidy's age. ABC Eric, I absolutely love seeing the Astros Mariners as the top story on SportsCenter last night. I don't watch SportsCenter, so I wouldn't know. Did you catch that? Did you catch any of that?
I did not. I fell asleep right after the game. As soon as the game was over, I turned it off, went to bed.
Jasper, last night I was watching sports highlights with my daughter, and when Judge's walk-off came on before I said anything, she goes, ugh, the Yankees, in the way that she did it with sarcasm and disgust. She's 7. I can die a happy man. Congratulations, Jasper. You've done well as a father. Josh in Beaumont, I'm not trading a quality starting pitcher under control. This could be either Urquidy or Garcia for a rental. That's Josh in Beaumont. That's kind of where I'm at, too. Like, I have a very difficult time, whether it's Urquidy, whether it's Garcia, trading either one of them for a rental. It'd be very difficult for me to do that.
Yeah, no, look, and it's the discussion we had yesterday yet again, but I think that when you kind of continue to make it relevant, we have to make it relevant, because until they do something and we see what they're thinking about doing, it's a possibility. And I think that this franchise has been through the ringer a couple of times, because in the Randy Johnson trade, the end result wasn't achieved. I still think it's a deal you have to do. You know, just like the Beltran deal. I think it's a deal that really worked out fantastically well for this Astros team. But because after that, because of the negotiations, because of all the different little idiosyncrasies we knew happened up until he walked, he didn't end up staying with the Astros. And so people have remembered it differently and have maybe a bitter taste in their mouth about rentals. But on the flip side, there's also been times when you've given up prospects, you've done the things you needed to do, and it can't work out. It's worked out for teams in this league. You have to consider it. I think the only reason why I'm still open to it, like when you proposed it to me yesterday as it related to Josh Bell, is because it's in a position where you have a surplus. Because you have enough to where you're not going to be like lesser because of the loss. Sure, it's going to sting, but you still have enough quality starting pitchers that you can learn to live with it. Everybody keeps saying you have to feel the pain to make a trade, to get another guy in a trade that's going to make you better. Well, okay, but it's easier to feel that pain if you know that you've got enough Band-Aids in the cabinet, and once it heals, you're going to be just fine with no repercussions, than it is if you know that you're still going to walk with a limp the rest of
the problem life. With doing that, though, not like if they got Josh Bell, like it's going to sting, but I'd be excited for Josh Bell, right? Like I might not even love the trade, but I'll be very happy if Josh Bell's a Houston Astro. Now, if you start looking ahead, and James Click is a look-ahead guy, let's be very honest. Yeah, he wants to be aggressive. Yeah, the owner's telling him to do something to, you know, do what's best for the organization. But Click is a long-term, sustained success type of dude. Yep. So, like, that's something that you have to remember when you think of the Astros and as it goes to the trade deadline. If you look at the starting rotation next year, look, Justin Verlander is not under contract next season. We're hoping that Jake Odorizzi is not under contract next season. We would like it to be via trade. If it's not via trade, we're hoping he does not pick up his player option for 2023. So those are two pitchers potentially out of the door. Now, let's assume there's not a trade ahead of August 2nd for one of the club-controlled guys. You're looking at Lance McCullers. You're looking at Fromber. You're looking at Luis. You're looking at Urquidy. And you're did I miss one? Javier? Let me do that again. Fromber, Lance McCullers Jr., Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, and Jose Urquidy. So there's five guys there. There's Hunter Brown still around as well. So that's six guys before you even kick the tires again on Justin Verlander. So there's still a surplus under contract next season, even if Verlander's gone, even if Odorizzi's gone as well. But it starts to get thin. It starts to get very thin. So I would find it difficult if Click trades one of the club-controlled starting pitchers for a rental. I would be very surprised by that.
It's very similar in a lot of ways, but it isn't played up as much as the significance of getting a quarterback on his first contract. It's getting these quality players under team control for an extended period of time. In Major League Baseball, as much as we've been analyzing the Astros for the here and now and then how it relates to the future, it isn't even about their farm system, and we know it's below average. It's about the fact that the core that you already have at very young ages under team control in the major leagues puts you at a distinct advantage almost to every other team in the league. Those other teams in the league, they've got to overpay in free agency. They've got to sit there and try and make blockbuster trades because they don't have the luxury. They have a lot of big contracts already, and they've had to overpay the guys that are significantly paying off for them in their lineups to make them playoff teams. Whereas the Astros are sitting here going, as good as we are right now, whether we pay Verlander or not, the reason why we're going to be good for the next 3 to 5 years is because we have team control over the key players on our team. Or in the instance of a Yordan, you got a bargain deal to wrap him up.
You stole him. It's amazing the contract number that Yordan's on. Eric says, do you think Hunter Brown is the guy coming up? If you do, then who leaves the rotations? Someone has to, and getting Josh Bell is better than just moving a starter to the pen. I'm not sure that Hunter Brown's going to pitch for the 2022 Astros. There's so much that has to happen between now and August 2nd before you can really make that decision. Like, if you trade Urquidy and you somehow get rid of Odorizzi, then yeah, I think you see Hunter Brown. If you don't add an arm to the bullpen, maybe you see Hunter Brown as that arm to the bullpen. I just don't know if Click's going to want to start the clock on Hunter Brown when he would be the number five reliever out of the bullpen, best case scenario, or if he's not cracking your starting rotation.
Again, I think as it relates to starting the clock or not, you're not, it's a concern, but you, again, you're in a luxury position and you got to see what you have. I mean, we've heard contrasting opinions on if he can be a starter or a relief pitcher, but the only way you're going to find out is to get his feet wet, throw him out there and see what he can do, not only for this season, but more specifically because he is a part of your future going forward. But you got to just determine what he's going to be, because that's going to go a long way, and also deciphering about what you're going to do with your rotation, how much money you're going to spend for JV, what you're going to do to keep that core together. I mean, I want to see him. I mean, I don't mind starting the clock because I know I got a ton of starting pitchers. I just need to see what he's going to be. If he's going to be a relief pitcher, we need it. So I'm okay with it. But I need to know the upside and basically just what he is going to be as much as possible.
You mean reliever this year, not long term.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? But if you believe Keith Law, he's only going to be a bullpen pitcher in the major leagues.
Doesn't like his command.
Yeah, you got to figure that out.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Bill Barnwell covers the NFL for ESPN. Training camp open today for the Houston Texans, by the way, in case you've been sleeping under a rock. Bill Barnwell will join us next, talk about the Texans and talk about some of the going-ons around the NFL. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Our favorite Killer Bee from ESPN who covers the NFL is Bill Barnwell, and he's joining us now on the HRMP guest line. Bill, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to hang out with us this afternoon. Training camp opening up today for the Houston Texans. I know you've had your eye on a couple of Houston Texans, maybe one quarterback in particular. But first, I want to ask you just your 20,000-foot view of where the Houston Texans are, second year under Nick Caserio, first year under Lovie Smith.
It still feels like, you know, they're kind of stuck in purgatory, you know. Obviously, the Deshaun Watson trade did happen before the draft, thankfully, and so they were able to finally start making those additions. But, you know, I look at this roster, and there's some interesting players to look at here. There's some players who I think, you know, can develop into something, but there's still so many veterans on short-term deals playing meaningful roles on this roster. So to me, I think, you know, for a team that really didn't do a lot last year, in part because they didn't have many draft picks in terms of, you know, supplementing their roster with core young players, it still feels like they're a year or two away from sort of figuring out, okay, this is what the next playoff Texans team is going to be, as opposed to a team that's just trying to get by with short-term deals for a lot of players.
Bill, now that you mentioned that Deshaun has been traded, now that they've kind of gotten that black cloud that's been hovering over the franchise out of the skies around NRG Stadium, we knew there was a national perception with a little chuckle built in every time you heard the words Houston Texans. Do you think that's changing now? Do you think that with a good draft, with a solid veteran head coach, with the things that Caserio has done to believe that he knows what he's doing, do you think that narrative is starting to turn a little bit when people hear those two words?
I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on what happens this season. I mean, certainly with David Culley last year, you know, it very much felt like he was a temporary coach. We saw it happen. After his first year, he got fired. Of course, the Watson trade just changed things. Of course, you know, that they're in a different situation now. But I think the question is, where do they look like at the end of this year? I mean, is Lovie Smith the guy for the next 3 or 4 years? If he is, then hey, that stability, that's great. But I think, you know, there's a decent chance they fire Lovie Smith after this year. And maybe they go after Josh McCown, who has no literal coaching experience at any level or meaningful coaching experience at any level. If that happens, I think there's still going to be people saying, well, why are they doing this? What's going on? So to me, I think, you know, they've taken steps in the right direction, but I think so much rides on this season in terms of sort of gauging where they are in this sort of long rebuild process.
It's Bill Barnwell joining us on the HRMP guest line. And this is, I'm curious your opinion of this, because we've kicked this around quite a bit with Nick Caserio at the helm of the Houston Texans in regards to his head coaching position. He hired David Culley, an oddball hire that no one ever really considers a head coach candidate. No one interviewed him for a head coach position, and all of a sudden he's the head coach of the Houston Texans. You mentioned Josh McCown in the interview process, some other names in the interview process that were very curious. Some were legitimate. And then you end up with Lovie Smith, who was never even interviewed. All of a sudden, on this Sunday evening, he becomes the leading candidate to be the head coach, and you announce him the next day. I'm not sure that Nick Caserio really values the head coaching position in the NFL like we see league-wide.
I think that's a fair point. And I mean, you know, I think the question is, do they have access to better candidates? I think certainly last year, given the Watson situation, given the, you know, the spot the organization was in, it wasn't a desirable job. There wasn't that sort of security. There wasn't, you know, the top-tier candidates were not interested. And, you know, I can't say what happened this year. I don't think they were turned down by dozens of people. It was better because you got to figure the Watson trade was coming when they were negotiating, or they were at least hoping, or they thought it was more plausible that a Watson trade could happen. But, I mean, it tells you, you know, the top candidates are not really interested right now in coming to Houston. That's not because Houston's not a great city, because it is. Not because the fans aren't great, because they are. But it's the roster. It was at the time the draft capital, which is now much better. And it's the temporary issue of that role. You know, again, I think nobody would be shocked if Lovie Smith was one and done, given his track record, given his history, his recent history, after his time with the Chicago Bears as a head coach, where he was very solid. You know, I feel like we hear more candidates come up for the Texans who are not mentioned in any other coaching search than any other team. And I think you would like to say they're thinking out of the box and they're creative and maybe they're going to spin it that way. And maybe they are in the long run going to hire a great coach who nobody else has thought about hiring, like a Hines Ward or a Josh McCown. But that coach is not there right now. And until we actually see that coach perform at a high level, it's easier to say that the Texans are just sort of, you know, cycling through coaches that no one else really wants to hire in terms of that head job.
Bill, I've been the leader of the band in Embrace the Suck for a two-year process of the Texans getting the best draft picks possible to advance this rebuild. A lot of people fight that tooth and nail and believe that now, suddenly, because Davis Mills is getting this opportunity and because of the draft that they've had, that there's the potential this team could win six-plus games. Do you see any scenario when they get that they could possibly get close to that? And then on the flip side, is there any scenario, no matter how Mills plays, that they don't look at a quarterback next year in the draft?
You know, it was a good question. I think it's plausible. You know, you never want to rule anything out. I think we're usually too confident about how good or bad teams are going to be before the year. And hey, I mean, you know, I don't know that signing all these veterans to short-term deals is the best move for the future of the franchise, but it does raise the talent level in the short term. And I think that's promising. I think they're very solid in the secondary, especially if their Stingley does emerge quickly as a NFL caliber cornerback. There's, of course, a decent offensive line. No matter a great offensive line, but a decent offensive line. Brandon Cooks is an NFL caliber receiver. Nico Collins looked like he could be a breakout guy in his second year. And, of course, you mentioned Davis Mills. And Davis Mills last year, end of the season, competition was not the stiffest. He played good football. And if you can do that, you'd be that guy over the course of the entire season in a relatively weak division. Yeah, I think it's not out of the question that they could go after, get 7-8 wins and be a, if not a playoff team, at least a playoff competitor in the AFC. But again, I think, you know, if Davis Mills plays well, I think it would be a real feather in the cap of this regime to say, hey, look, we found a quarterback in the third round. So to me, I think the organization does want Davis Mills to succeed. Will that happen? I think we have to see, but I think it's fair to give him this opportunity to see what he can do with, you know, again, not the best people around him, but at least a legit number one receiver and an okay offensive line to work with in Houston.
Bill Barnwell of ESPN joining us on the HRMP guest line. It's a tricky spot that the Texans are in because you can have a great return on investment for a third-round rookie in Davis Mills, and I think he's already shown you that, quite honestly. He's turned himself into a starting-caliber player in 2022 and does deserve the 17 games for the Houston Texans this year, but then still not be good enough, right? Like, what is the upside potential of Davis Mills? What is the holy you-know-what Davis Mills turned into this? Because he could be a hit for a third-rounder and still not good enough to where you want him as your franchise quarterback.
Absolutely. I mean, if Davis Mills turns out to be a backup quarterback, that's still good value in the third round. Those guys get $5, $6 million a year on the open market. Getting that guy for $1 million a year or so is still good value. That's one of the better picks you'll make in a typical draft. Now, of course, Texas fans, the organization, everyone wants Davis Mills to be better than that, and I think he has that in him. I think the question for me is, when you look at typical guys in the middle rounds of the draft, there's something off. You know, there has to be some story you can tell yourself to justify that guy not being a top 10 pick. Because if you have a great arm and you had, you know, went to a good school, you had a, you know, a good college career, and you still got drafted in the third round, it's fine because you're not that good. With Davis Mills, I think the sort of story you tell yourself is, well, he did not have significant college experience. Part of that was COVID, part of it was stuff here and there. But a guy who came in as a top prospect coming into college, not get a ton of reps in college, and then now getting a chance to play at the pro level, learning at the pro level, maybe he is a first-round pick who just happened to fall to the third round because of that weird COVID college football season. I think, I don't know that I would believe that necessarily, but I think that's the story, the most plausible story you can tell yourself if Davis Mills does turn out to be a superstar. Now, granted, I thought Josh Allen was not going to be a superstar, and he's proven that wrong. So after Josh Allen's development, I never want to say anything is impossible. You always want to say that something is possible for these guys. Because I've seen Josh Allen emerge from being a talented quarterback who made major missteps to being an absolute superstar. So that's probably the best-case development story for any quarterback right now.
Bill, I got to ask you as well, because we mentioned Deshaun Watson, because he still is relevant in this town because of the trade and what it means to the Houston Texans. Where do you see this whole thing with Deshaun Watson, the suspension? When do you see it coming? And what do you think the Browns are going to do both with and without him as it relates to the Texans' obvious draft capital next season?
Yeah, it's funny to see how it's flipped. I mean, for so many years, the Browns were the team waiting to see what happened with the Texans' draft. Now it's vice versa. You know, I have to admit, guys, I don't really want to speculate too much about the verdict or what's going to happen in terms of the suspension. I just, you know, it's moved so many times. There's no real precedent for it. The NFL has been, you know, so sort of back and forth about it. There's been so many different rumors. I don't know that I really have a lot to add in terms of what it's likely to be. I think we'll just have to kind of wait and see what happens. But I will tell you, in terms of what they do next, of course, they did sign Jacoby Brissett, who is a solid NFL quarterback. And I think I pitched this before. The guy who comes to mind for me is Jimmy Garoppolo, where there's not a big market for Jimmy Garoppolo right now in terms of teams who have the cap space and the roster to put him on. There's not many starting jobs available. Jimmy Garoppolo is a guy who played in a very similar scheme in San Francisco to what they run in Cleveland, and a guy who has so much to prove on a one-year deal, basically. So it's the final year of his contract, a guy who can be, who has everything to gain from playing one season in Cleveland at a high level and then hitting free agency. So whether it's an eight-game suspension, 12, 16, 17, you know, if it's that kind of significant suspension, which I think most people think it will be, I do think that Jimmy Garoppolo would make a ton of sense there via trade from the San Francisco 49ers.
Bill, as always, we really appreciate the time. Great stuff, as always. And enjoy trading camp season, and we hope to chat soon.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, guys.
Bill Barnwell covers the NFL for ESPN. He mentioned 7-8 wins for the Houston Texans. Likelihood of that, and could Lovie really be fired after 1 year? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The American sports and comedy group from Frisco, Texas, Dude Perfect, is coming to the Toyota Center tonight. You don't have Friday plans? Well, make them now. Dude Perfect coming to the Toyota Center in Houston this evening. We are giving away a pair of tickets right now. Caller number 3 to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets to see the unpredictable trick shots and epic antics all live and in person. Tickets are on sale now at livenation.com. The winner will have those tickets emailed to them. And again, you're looking for plans on this Friday night? LiveNation.com. Go check out Dude Perfect. Always like to see their trick shots. They're very good at what they do. Bill Barnwell just joined us at ESPN NFL Insider. Very good stuff. I remember reading recently his tiers of quarterbacks, blah, 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 blah. Like, I think he was pretty reasonable, realistic about Davis Mills. And look, he didn't even eliminate the idea that Davis Mills could turn into a top 10 quarterback.
Right.
He was talking about Josh Allen as an example. Now, Josh Allen was a first rounder, was drafted very high, has tools that Davis Mills does not quite have. But you can't close, like, we've been anti-Davis Mills compared to Mills Mafia. You've been higher on Mills than me. Brendan's been higher than Mills than both of us. But even I, being the Mills hater of the group, I still understand that in the NFL and all sports in general, that the impossible is possible, right? Like, Davis Mills could become a top 10 starter. Nobody expected Tom Brady to be the best NFL resume of all time after being drafted in the sixth round out of Michigan by the Patriots. So I would not slam the door on Davis Mills being a guy, a franchise quarterback for the Houston Texans. My content is that it's very unlikely, and the most realistic growth and ceiling for Davis Mills, I still feels like not good enough to where you want him to be as a franchise quarterback in the NFL.
And I totally understand that, because I think that when you and I were kicking this back and forth the other day, if you can't get the top 10, if you can't believe that this guy has the potential to take you where some of the better quarterbacks in the league can take a team, then you need to leave the door open. That doesn't mean you shut the door on Davis Mills. You just have to be open to other possibilities that may develop into something even better. You're going to learn a lot about him this year. But I still believe that, again, looking at the Patriots' way amongst all the other teams that have been there and done this kind of thing previously, the last thing you want to do is pigeonhole yourself into an overcommitment to a guy before you have to and limit yourself in the opportunity to get yet another quarterback in the building that might help you as much or more. And if that's the case, it's just a plethora of riches where you could take one, whichever guy doesn't pan out, and trade him, still have value, get something back for them that helps your football team. And we saw this with Garoppolo and Brady. We saw with all the different New England quarterbacks that reaped the benefits of being a backup behind Brady or got small sample sizes to do something with Brady out that capitalized for themselves and for the team. I don't think it's a bad look for the Texans, no matter what happens with Davis Mills, to be able to admit to themselves, we're going to take another quarterback. You can have a discussion with Mills and say, don't take it personally. We like competition. We love what you've been able to do so far, but we will not sell ourselves short in terms of any opportunity we can to make this team better.
Yeah, look, I'm not opposed to that. I think it's a like draft day decision, right? And there's a lot that what can happen in 2022 that's going to influence all of those things. Where you're at in the draft influences it. How Davis Mills plays influences it. If he proves us wrong and we have to eat a lunch full of crow, the Texans won't be interested in a quarterback. But we'll see what 2022 holds for Davis Mills. And, of course, I like to ask the question, what can Davis Mills be if you believe in Davis Mills? I thought it was interesting, too, what Barnwell said about 7 to 8 wins. Nationally, I think people look at this team that has a chance to win more games than how we feel about them locally. And it might be scorn. It might be that we're jaded. It might be that we have this chip on our shoulder towards the Houston Texans. Barnwell says, look at the division. Look at the schedule. 7 to 8 wins isn't out of the realm of possibility. We talked about, I think it was Football Outsiders. They looked at it the other day, and they had their computer model where they simulated the season a million times, and they had their win total like 7, 7.5. So it is interesting to look at it from like, okay, locally they think the Texans have no chance. Nationally, they see a mediocre team that could find its way winning 7 or 8 games.
But I think nationally it's more volatile, right? I think that you could see it getting as high as that, but I think there's also the realistic approach that they could go with 1 or 2 wins if the bottom really falls out.
You see them picking number one in mock drafts all the time.
Yep, all the time. So I think that it runs the gamut. I think that because we see this team on a regular basis, but we also hold out more hope than most in terms of this team being able to take that first baby step forward, that I think that we're more honest with ourselves than some of the fan base is, but we're going to tell you what we really think in terms of the overall development of this team. And because it isn't about developing this team for this season with a chance to make the playoffs, it's about developing this team by staying on the course, by keeping the plan in motion, by making the progress necessary so that you can see the real true benefits and the fruits of your labor in 3 years when you are fighting for playoff spots and then taking it to the next level after that and then being able to look at coaches and players and free agents and things that can even enhance you even more as opposed to right now being okay with who you are and being able to admit who you are, no matter what any of the critics think or the experts, you know who you are, you know where you are, and you know, at least Nick Caserio does, what his plan says, where his plan says they should be. And I believe he should feel real good about them being right on par or maybe a little ahead of where he thought they should be at this point. Don't screw that up if you don't have to. Now, that doesn't mean go lose a game you could win. It just means that you have to be realistic in not only expectations, but how you attack the season, decisions you make, and how you react to wins and losses from the fan base to everybody around the team.
See, OG on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975.
I love that guy.
713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. He says, y'all don't believe in baby steps. That's not true. We believe in baby steps, but we don't think that the barometer of baby steps is victories. We think that the barometer of baby steps is what you produce on the field. And that doesn't have to mean wins and losses. Derek Stingley Jr., you want to see him develop as a rookie. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the entire rookie class. I'm not going to name every single one of them. You want Davis Mills to look good. Now, you put yourself in the danger zone if he looks almost good enough, but not quite. Now you're in a very difficult spot. You want Titus Howard to emerge. You want Kenyon Green to emerge. You want Damian Pierce to have a really good year as a rookie running back. So it's not that we're anti-baby steps. It is great if we see those baby steps and you see the players give this city hope and you have a young core and young foundation that you think you can build around. But that baby step barometer doesn't have to equal wins.
Right.
And if you think that it only equals wins, you have blinders on.
See, and OG has always got the blinders on his way or the highway in terms of rationalizing this. You can, and we've said this ever since Caserio made the statement before last season even started, don't judge us based on wins and losses. You can take baby steps. You can take, look, we both said we loved the draft class that they put together. We believe that in a nutshell is a huge positive towards them taking that first baby step forward. We believe that just being able to admit that Davis Mills is going to have a full season to prove himself is enough to say you're not going to bring in a Jimmy Garoppolo. You don't need a veteran. You're not going to take on a salary and a big name for the sake of taking on a has-been big name to try and like get you a few more wins that you really don't need. And you're going to leave your options open. So the worst thing you can do is take one giant leap in one season and get to 8 or 7 or 8 wins and then realize you're taking it in the shorts for three or four more yep. years because you decided to try and jump too far too fast.
It depends on how you get to eight wins. If you get to eight wins because Davis Mills is playing like a Pro Bowler and Damian Pierce looks like he's going to be Darren Sproles and Derek Stingley Jr. looks like he's Deion Sanders and Jalen Petrie looks like he's Troy Polamalu. Like, if you get to eight wins that way, we'd be like, oh, well, this team can win a Super Bowl. If you get to eight wins in a weird way, you're winning a lot of close games, 17-14. Davis Mills is very mediocre. The rookies are, like, solid but not great. Brandon Cooks has a huge year because how important is he where you're at in 3-5 seasons? So, to me, the wins isn't the best barometer whenever you're talking about direction of the organization. And if we're being completely honest with you, Nick Caserio has told you that in the past. He says, look at the process, not the results. Results meaning victories. Bill mentioned something that was kind of surprising to me. I don't know how you felt about it, but Lovie Smith could be fired after 1 year. Like, what would have to happen in 2022 for Lovie Smith to get fired?
World War III in the locker room? We've said there's just no way he can go after 1 year unless it looks like more complete chaos than Urban Meyer and David Culley coaching a team at the same time. I just think that because they've had so many missteps the way they've handled coaches over the last year and a half, that they literally stumbled into at least getting a reputable veteran named coach that has experience, to where I just think to save all of their reputations and imaging and the organization itself, I don't think there's any, they can't get rid of a coach after a year, in my opinion.
I don't think they will do it, but I don't think it's unthinkable if they only win a game or two. Because I don't think this roster suggests they should be quite that bad.
I think it depends on, again, how it happens. But if they only win a game or two, something drastic has happened and things look very bad. Like, I would think that if that were the case, now you're looking at Lovie Smith as all of a sudden turns himself into David Culley and can't coach himself out of a paper bag. Like, 1-2 wins with this team, with the schedule that they have, seems out of the realm of possibility. So you're right. Like, if they win one or two games, like, one, Lovie Smith probably wants to be fired. And then two, I think Nick Caserio, the thing is, too, and Lamont texted us, the 713-780-ESPN, and I think it's a hard truth. Lovie will not be fired as long as the Flores lawsuit is lingering. That would support his case. A lot of people think that Lovie Smith was hired because of the Brian Flores lawsuit, because there's no way the Texans could spin a vanilla white guy head coach and Josh McCown, who has never coached a single snap in the NFL or college. The highest level of coaching is high school. So, like, there are some other things that are involved with Lovie Smith's tenure as a Houston Texan head coach. For him to be fired, I think it would take something like what Brendan's saying, where it's 2-15, the locker room is just in shambles, the culture that Easterby has set, CEO of culture, just hasn't been met. I think that's your scenario. I just don't find that, like, any chance of that happening.
I don't know that there's another coaching job in the NFL that has as much priority on imaging and just the overall perception of the organization and the coach than this Texans job, because of everything that they've done, because of who they've considered, because of the fact that Culley was such a freaking joke. That maybe Jacksonville, because they're coming out of Urban Meyer, but they too got a guy that's very veteran that already has proven with the guys he's hired and what he's trying to do, and the free agents that they brought in, that they now seem to be much more stable. But I think that everybody's still watching the Texans. Everybody's still, like, jury's still out in a lot of ways because of how many missteps they had in the coaching search in the last year and a half.
Yep, 713-780-ESPN. Texans training camp opened today. So we conclude our top 10 storylines of the Houston Texans 2022 season. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.